Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is the 20th of January, despite what I may have said earlier in my introduction.
What did you say earlier?
I think I may have said the 19th.
Oh, that's
Well, the 19th was yesterday.
Yeah, well, it was last year.
It was yesterday. The problem is I write the script the day before, and then I have the little date on the bottom, and I'll look down, and I said, oh, it's Wednesday, and then I'll look at the thing.
There must be an app for that somewhere.
You forget to add the day. You know, it's all math, Blair. It's all math. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we have exciting news, and then we'll get on to the subjects at hand. First of all, Alan Chartok is here, sporting his what kind of hat do we? What is that?
It's a communist hat.
It's a communist. It's a Russian hat. It's very
the
furry.
The new premier.
Where do you buy a hat like that?
Over to Jack's Country Squire in
Bandon. That makes sense.
Oh, I'm going to give you money. I want one of those.
I'll get one for you.
Cool.
It's my gift to you, Rosemary.
Thank you.
As long as you give me money.
I love you.
Wouldn't it be great if all four of us came in wearing those hats for the panel?
Yes. Although the winters is not as cold, we may not need them anymore.
It's 15 degrees out there.
It is chilly.
I've broken out the fur and leather. I'm freezing.
I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there either.
Faux fur for anybody with paint cans out there.
Don't worry about the faux leather, too. Rosemary Romeo is here. She is a professor of journalism at the University at Albany.
Starting today. Welcome back, you Albany students.
Yes, very nice. We started at St. Rose last night. SUNY starts today, so the roads are busy. That's good.
The kids are back.
Yeah, well, it must really be really exciting to be before a class. I mean, I did that for 40 years, but now none of my former colleagues invite me to, you know, come and talk to their classes.
Oh my gosh, he's got standing.
We just had this conversation. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And, Blair, poor invite Alan. Him, will you?
Anytime.
Blair Horner is here. NYPERG's Blair Horner, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Been a little while. It's very nice.
I know. I'm feeling like Alan. I sort of have to beg to get on the show.
Don't even start that way. You're in New York. You're in Italy. You're down here. You're doing this. I got a press conference. You're a busy guy.
I'm begging. I'm begging. Anytime, man. Whatever. Please.
Anytime. I'll give you these 2 days. We always love having you here. Hey, we have exciting news. This is very cool. We were talking about, we've been talking this week about the whoosh of the fund drive, and we're just getting over that. $100,000 less, you know, on the drive. And I think we had 120 to go yesterday, 118, something like that. Right now, raised in the lockbox, I think it was 380 something yesterday. Today in the lockbox, this morning as of 14 minutes ago, $400,135. Wow. And 71 cents.
That's fantastic.
Money machine.
No. It is
cents.
So.
Wait, we don't know the answer to that. We've been trying to figure it out.
We are. Look. There's $25,000 from the Spitzer Foundation if we can do this.
That's why this is so important.
Well, no, the real reason it's important is it reaffirms, Joe, what we are as a community. I mean, either we are what I think we are, which is dedicated to thoughtful discussion, to rational, radio as opposed to, you know, nonsense. And if people want it, this is it. Now, people walk up to me in the street, as you know, and they say, I don't like your fund drives. I say, have you given to the lockbox? And they blah, 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 blah. So the answer is, they say that. But now, right now, we are so close we can touch that $25,000.
So it's $25,000. So right now, I did the math. It's $99,865 that we need to make it. So we're under $100,000. And that all seems very doable. And
no, it doesn't seem doable.
You're ready for the whoosh.
I want the whoosh.
No. Instead
of whoosh up.
Instead of people coming up to you and saying, Alan, do you think we're going to make it? They're going to come up to you and say, hey, nice hat.
Oh, yeah. No. But Blair wants me to get a red star to put on the front of this.
$99,865. If we come together as a community, a WAMC family, we can do this. We have a week and a half to go before
that's
the fund drive.
From
now until February 1st, we've made $400,000 together as a family, as a group, as a community, and it will shorten the drive. I'm not telling tales out of school, but if we get to the 500, we get 525,
right? Yeah.
And the last time we we had very similar numbers in the February drive, and the drive was only 3.5 days long.
Unbelievable.
So we were done Thursday morning. So if you're, you know, for those of you who complain that the drive goes on too long, well, it'll be a 3.5 day drive if, you know, everything goes well. I mean, we can't guarantee that.
No, we certainly can, because you never know.
But it's possible. We've done it. We did it last year.
You're an optimist. I'm a pessimist. I'm scared to death. I am scared to death. I'm really scared. Because we, you know, all you got to do is go to WAMC.org. It's so simple. It's like
WAMC.org. Oh, and Blair, did you see the tote bag you get for $100?
Wow. And now, it has a lockbox.
Yeah, it has a lockbox on it. It's the lockbox tote bag. And you can only get it if you give money to the lockbox. See, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And if you go to WAMC.org and you put money in the lockbox, you'll see what the tote looks like because there's a picture of it on there. Not to mention our Facebook site as well. So WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We still have 40 minutes to do a show, Rosemary. Don't stop looking at the clock. All right, let's go.
I didn't say a word.
Did we tell you how to teach?
Want to come talk to my class today? Yeah.
Yeah, but what about that, you know, what about that Sarah Palin?
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, can I wind up on her?
All right, can I set it up and
quickly.
Then we'll go? Okay, so Sarah Palin, yesterday there was a sort of a teasing of the media all day that Donald Trump was going to have a special guest. And everybody assumed that it was Sarah Palin, but nobody really let on. And the only person who seemed a little bitter about it was Ted Cruz. And so Sarah Palin flies to Iowa and says, I'm endorsing Donald Trump. Surprising probably no one. Go ahead.
Wow. Okay, well, I think John McCain should rot in hell for Sarah Palin. It was a travesty and a spectacle yesterday with the two of them.
Isn't that a little strong?
No, it really
Isn't
wasn't.
That a little
I mean,
strong
here we
for
are.
A
we
war
have
hero.
We have a, no, he really made a mistake with her, I think.
Well, so he made a mistake. I think probably the guy first in line holding up his hand, even with a torn rotator cuff, if he has one like I do, would be John McCain saying, boy, did I make a mistake.
And by the way,
he actually has said, no, it was the best decision he ever made, so I reject that. But meanwhile, you have the spectacle of this man and woman out to be chief vice president or energy secretary or something, and Donald Trump saying things like pumping their arms and saying, yeah, we're going to kick the ass of ISIS. Come on. We're the United States of America. It's just so demeaning. I hate watching it. Meanwhile, at home, her son is being arrested for
domestic
abuse.
Violence, yeah.
So, okay, I can't call her bad names, Alan said, but I can say she's a horrible mother and a terrible politician.
You know, you've used certain words around here that the feminist community doesn't like.
I know,
so there's
and
no
I'm
reason.
Of that community.
You could call
so.
Her, for example, one could say, if you wanted to, a political prostitute. But you couldn't, you know, but that's a different word from the
one
you've been using.
I don't actually think she is a political whore. I don't think she is.
Now you've done it.
I didn't call her that,
yeah,
Alan.
Yeah, but you use the W word.
She likes being in the limelight. She was in her glory, that tinny little voice squealing like a pig with lipstick on yesterday. It was just awful. It was a spectacle. I'm ashamed of my country.
Yikes, where do you go with that? I mean, I thought, just to put it aside for the moment, it's sort of, in a way, I mean, this may seem terrible following up on Rosemary's point, but it's probably smart politically. Ted Cruz was eating Cruz is eating into him in Iowa and New Hampshire. Palin and arguing that Trump isn't a real conservative. And, you know, who comes along but Sarah Palin, who is a favorite of the most conservative elements of the Republican Party, blessing the Trump candidacy. And so
he
that
totally
probably
stole
helps.
All the headlines yesterday,
right.
Too.
And there's no this will probably go forward. I assume she'll do more stuff with him. And he can just suck up all the oxygen out of the room. And it may make the difference in whether or not he wins the first two the caucus first and the primary.
Well, something strange is going on here. It's what I call the out-of-the-box phenomena, meaning that middle-class Americans, some, are saying, you know, we don't like the regular political establishment. So they're either saying on the Democratic side, we like Bernie, and a lot of them are, or we like, you know, we like Trump. So this is another nail in that approach to how you do your politics.
Yeah.
So in September, she told Jake Tapper on CNN that she was interested in endorsing Donald Trump, and that she would like to be a part of his administration as the Secretary of Energy. She said, quote, I think, and this is to bolster Rosemary's point, I believe, I think a lot about the Department of Energy because energy is my baby. Oil and gas and minerals, those things that God has dumped on this part of the earth for mankind's use, instead of relying on unfriendly foreign nations for us to import their resources. If I were head of that, I would get rid of it, and I would let the states start having more control over the lands that are within their boundaries and the people who are affected by the developments within their space. So, you know, if I were in charge of that, it would be a short-term job, but would it be really great to have someone who knows energy and is pro-responsible development to be in charge?
Not only that, she knows foreign policy. She knows where the Russians are.
She can see it from her old home. She can't see it from the new home.
She can see the star in Alan's head.
You know, I can't demean somebody who rose to be governor of a state. That takes a certain amount of, you know, smarts and connections. But she had the job. She went even higher than that. And then she doesn't do the work. She backed away. She didn't work hard enough to be a vice presidential candidate. She was not prepared for interviews or for debates. And then she left the governorship. She doesn't do the work. So
it isn't
enough.
She did a reality show.
She did a reality show. She likes fame and publicity. And, you know, you sort of feel it. You guys get that. You walk out of here and everybody knows who you are.
Well, not everybody, but a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people do. In our small little way. You get it.
They are to Sarah Palin, but yes.
That's true. But you know what I mean. Yeah. You get recognition, and it's intoxicating. And
it
I think she's just drunk on fame.
You get it too, don't you?
I do. So I sort of appreciate that. But the thing is, she had gifts and didn't use them. Even if I disagreed with her, it would be one thing. But I have contempt for her because she has gotten into positions
You're
like responsibility. She's gotten into these positions and then frittered it away. I'll shut up now.
No.
Do we find it, you know, I was reading it in the Times, so it was a fairly, I think it was tongue-in-cheek, but it was, I mean, it's true, obviously, they were talking about other key endorsements that Trump has received from celebrity endorsements, and it's like Ted Nugent and Dennis Rodman. And
Dennis Rodman went to North Korea, didn't he?
Right. And Jesse Ventura and Charlie Sheen. And it just, I thought to myself, Terrell Owens, I thought, wow. So, you know.
What do you mean, wow? You mean the cuckoo's nest, right?
Yeah. But it's like that's where.
But this is all about the Republican base. This is not about the general election. This is about getting him the nomination. And so in that way, it's shrewd. He's touching on all of the people that are viewed as icons.
So the only thing and I don't even disagree with you on, I can see where it would work in Iowa. I don't know if Palin would work as well in New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire, independent voters are sort of the wild card in the primary there because you don't necessarily know how they're going to vote. But Trump's, you know, sort of the whole argument that he makes is he's the guy who can make America great and he can win all of the elections. He does not want to lose anything. So he's got to get through Iowa. Palin can help there. And there may be other people that he'll roll out when he gets into New Hampshire.
I think he'll have new tricks in New Hampshire. I think you're right. He's playing a big picture. And I'm sure that he's thinking of Palin in South Carolina, too. Another wacko state. Did you see the latest measure now? They want to license journalists. You know the First Amendment? Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of press. They want to license journalists.
That's your fault because you're the one who always sits here and says, she's not a real journalist.
I never say that.
Yes, you do.
I don't.
Yes, you do.
Yes, I think Oprah's a journalist. I think John Stewart is. I think Sean Penn is a really lousy journalist.
But the point really is that now, for once, if the South Carolina, you know, registered journalists at least will know who's a real journalist and who's not.
Oh, my God. Well, if that happens, I'm quitting my job to march full time on Supreme Court to change that.
Yeah.
Horrible law. Yeah. Isn't passed.
Terrible.
Just an idea, in case you haven't
caught the cynicism in my voice.
Or sarcasm.
Sarcasm.
You did both, actually.
Yeah. then
he's so smart. He sits there like, he knows what we're doing.
He sits there like a sort of major figure.
No, I have to make sure that I don't say anything that gets me into trouble with you guys. That's all. I have to be careful.
So we would invite you back to me?
Since I'm so rarely invited back, this is an opportunity. I have to make sure I don't alienate anyone.
All kinds of people are checking in.
Now, we have a minute.
Okay. Very quickly. Julie says, best quote I read in Facebook, quote, Sarah Palin wears her suicide. Now, this is the word best of political incorrectness very well. I assume she meant vest, but what do I know? Okay, so and then Julie says, "Oh no, we did that, Julie." And Tracy says, "Right on, Rosemary. It's incredibly satisfying to hear Rosemary ripping to Sarah Palin. Please don't hold back. I do believe."
I don't think she was holding back. Don't
I do
worry.
Believe Sarah Palin is one of the seven signs of the apocalypse.
Oh, I wish I had that line, Tracy. I may have to steal that.
And Tom says very quickly. Tom says, "Does anyone believe Sarah Palin was paid for her support by Donnie Trump?"
No, I don't believe it.
No,
I think she sincerely believes it, and she loves it.
Well,
yeah.
I think she's more convenient to what she needs
right.
out of life.
Right.
It's a word I don't want to use because you know you don't want to use it. I'm not going to.
You don't want to make it sound like whore.
All right. I would never use that word. I get ripped to shreds.
Okay, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna stop there because I just think we should, and we're gonna take a break. We'll be back and we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Blair Horner make up the panel this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We would love to hear from you, and we're going to be talking about other issues as well. So you can weigh in on those. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable, to the panel discussion.
Oh, God.
Very nice to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
We've had about five incredible Rosemary letters, like from Deidre. Rosemary, you are awesome. Okay. And we had one from the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce, but it wasn't about anything we're talking about.
They think he's
okay.
Awesome, too.
Good morning.
They think you're awesome.
Palin, et cetera, Al. Good morning. Go get him, Rosemary. Tell us how you really feel. Surely, I can't be the only one who thinks it's about time we set higher standards to qualify for a president of the United States. Perhaps an IQ minimum, experience, military service, something besides just a smile and a fat bankroll. That's what he said. Okay. And
she's very pretty. You know, she's got an interesting life, but God, she's so divisive. She uses her children, her developmentally disabled child, as a prop. She is so despicable.
Well, Betsy says, "I love Rosemary."
I love you too,
Lisa. Okay, so and William says, "Donald Trump, Sarah Palin could say, get on the get on the trampoline and spring forward."
Oh.
Okay.
That's catchier than Make America Great Again.
And can you talk about dark money in relationship to what is going on with Trump and Palin, as well as the angry Republicans? Rich from New Hartford, there was a great story on NPR last night about the dark money and the Koch brothers and what they were doing and how much money.
Yeah, the new Jane Meyer really
was. It was really incredible. Really something.
Rachel Maddow also has had lots of that. Jane Meyer wrote that book. She's a wonderful investigative reporter.
Yes.
And Jason says,
good book.
Alan says Rosemary is insulting feminists by calling Palin names. I don't remember saying that, to be honest with you. Yet Alan says young people, quote, can't find the Pacific Ocean on a map. It is true in a major story that they couldn't. I'm so sorry. No insult meant.
Well, probably a lot of older adults can't either, actually, if they were tested.
I know where it is. It's over there on the left coast. Depending on which way you're standing.
Yeah, right. Depending on where the R and L's are on your shoes. let us move on to other topics and find out what else is happening in the world. Blair is here, so why should we waste that opportunity?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about ethics in Albany.
Oh,
this is a story from the New York Times.
Is that an oxymoron you just said?
Yes.
This is your turn to go off.
On this, the leaders of New York's capital can all agree something must be done about ethics. Reforms must be passed. The public trust once again earned. What better place to start than the ethics panels of the State Assembly and the State Senate? Then again, this is Albany. In the Senate, the Ethics Committee's last recorded hearing came more than 6 years ago in June 2009.
And when the chairman of the committee wanted to hold a hearing,
they yanked him off the committee. Right.
All right. Say it ain't so, Blair.
I will say that only if you want me to.
Okay, no.
We want you to.
So let me just ask.
It is so.
So the New York Times is reporting this, obviously, as a tap on the shoulder. But this is something I assume for you, working in the Capitol every day, that you are well aware of.
The ethics committees, just to give the listeners some background, the ethics committees typically are used to deal with hearings on ethical violations by the members. They're not really set up to be sort of
organized.
But we
haven't had any of those.
Right. And so, yeah, but I mean, yes.
You remember
those. Even in that area, it's sort of more of an,
yeah.
But I've gone to some of these meetings, just on the assembly where they're, you know, going to punish someone. And they kick me out as soon as I get in there. So even when they have a meeting, it's not open to the public.
So you're not even invited to those meetings.
I know. And I'm sorry. Actually, there's a pattern developing. Maybe I should be moving to Alaska.
Can I just say, didn't the Times Union have this story a few days ago? I hate that we're giving attention to the New York Times. They did not break this story.
That's a very, very good point.
I'm sorry, what did I miss here?
The story about this committee that does nothing.
Yeah, the TU had that story, yeah.
The TU had it several days ago.
Rex Smith, proprietor.
Yeah, I would like to just point that out.
Thank you.
Well, and it's right, though. I mean, the ethics committees, they get stipends. I mean, the chairs get extra money for chairing these committees.
And they don't have a meeting.
And the Senate one, when he has the temerity to want to have to do something on the committee. I can remember talking to Senator Avella about the hearing and saying, yes, I would come testify.
No, isn't he one of the traitors? In other words,
he is a member of the Independent Democratic Conference.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying.
I call them the traitors. They left the Democrats to keep the Republicans in office,
and they are now because the Republicans don't even have a numerical majority.
So that's right. Wow. So they're keeping them in office. So as a bone of contention, they send Avella. They make them all chairman, many of them chairman.
Yeah,
and Avella becomes chairman of the non-existent.
Right.
The Emperor Has No Clothes Ethics Committee.
Did he turn back his salary because he did nothing?
I think they moved him somewhere else.
Yeah, they gave him another thing.
I think that was the way
they did, but I mean, during the time when he was head of that committee that was doing nothing.
I don't know the answer.
Oh, no, the answer is no. Come on. I mean, of course they did.
Okay, that's corruption.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. We did many stories in Bosnia about committee chairmen who got extra pay and did nothing. That's corruption.
Thank you.
And
thank you for writing.
By the way, I mean, you know, this story that we're... You know, we're talking about here with the committees is sort of like amplified even in the agencies. I mean, the state has a state watchdog, the Joint Commission. It's been around for 4 years. One of those years, there's been no executive director.
Right.
So what better way to tell the public how much you care? If you don't have directors, you have committees that don't do any work. I mean, it really, I think, underscores what is wrong with Albany.
Now, from the Department of Chutzpah, and this news will be broken on the Capitol Connection this week, starring Blair Horner.
It's not broken anymore if you're going to say it.
From the Department of Chutzpah comes the question of the Cuomo ways of making corruption de minimis in Albany, and one of them, Blair says, maybe it should apply to the governor as well as to the...
Oh, my gosh. Well, all right, here we go. So, the governor's ethics proposal limits outside income for lawmakers, more or less the same way as the members of Congress have limits. In the definition of what is income, the governor's proposal says if you get any royalties from books, that will count toward the cap of 15%, and you're not allowed to get advance royalties on any books.
Oh.
But yes, and Joe looks because Joe remembers that the governor actually had a book sale.
How much, Blair?
Around 700 grand.
$700,000.
And got advanced royalties on the book. So that would be prohibited. I assume they didn't think it through when they wrote that particular provision.
And last time I looked,
we think it should cover the executive as much as the legislature.
Last time I looked, that book did not sell very well.
I don't believe that it did.
I do not believe that it made back its investment.
Are you kidding? I mean, I think they only sold, the last time I looked, there was 2,000 books. They tell me
it was
a little more
3,000, yeah.
Yeah, that's the last.
So they did not make it.
And then HarperCollins, who is the publisher, is a parent company, is News Corp. Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's obviously there are issues there. But we think in that particular case, yes, the governor's proposal for the legislature should apply to the executive as well. How's that?
You heard it right here. You heard that news right here, broken on WAMC.
Freedom of information should also apply to both houses.
Well, yeah, and the governor's proposal does that. The governor expands the Freedom of Information Law to cover
the
legislature.
Except that when you talk to any of the great guys who work for the Times Union or for other newspapers, they will tell you that the governor's agencies take forever to answer a freedom of information. So while you're espousing more freedom of information, you're not obeying the law.
And the governor vetoed bills that passed overwhelmingly in both houses last year that would have penalized the agencies for foot dragging when it came to denying freedom of information law requests. Is the government is holding public information, not the other way around, and the government should make that stuff available. They didn't. The governor vetoed it, saying that because the legislature wasn't covered, he's going to veto those laws. That doesn't make any sense.
How do they get away with this stuff? The only way you get away with it is if you basically have a cynical view of us and that nobody's ever going to understand any of it.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, you have the shiny object thing about the legislature being covered, and that distracts attention from what you did.
So now, I'm sorry, Joe, just look very quickly, Blair, there is a story out now that the new speaker of the assembly, who was chosen by all of them reformers down there in that's sardonic. They chose a guy who was the boss of the Bronx. Boss Hastie becomes now Speaker Hastie. From being Boss Hastie running the Bronx. And can you imagine? You get rid of Shelley Silver, and everybody's adamant. Blair comes in and says, okay, this is a great time for Nyberg to lead the charge to clean things up here, and you elect the boss of the Bronx to be your speaker. That's really something.
Well, that's where the votes are, right? I mean, that he cobbles together votes, he wins.
Well,
so, and,
yeah,
you know,
that's true.
It's like the Trump thing. We talked about it before. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it matters who has the votes, and that's how it works out. And that's what happened with Hastie.
I do want to take a break. However, just real quick, the other story with statewide interest and consequences is Mayor de Blasio's poll ratings are on the rise.
And I know why. Because Andrew Cuomo insists on beating the hell out of de Blasio. Now, de Blasio is not a sympathetic character, and people don't really like him down in New York that much, and his polls have always shown that. But whack, 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 he never stops. And I have advised my keeper when they call me about this very issue, and I say, what are you doing? Why are you guys doing that? It just makes him look like a bully, which is the one thing he doesn't want to look like.
Yeah, and the governor's budget does all this, where he clobbers the city.
Terrible.
Hundreds of dollars. That helps people to circle the wagons. You're absolutely right. You overdo it, and you get blowback.
Well, he also, the mayor, has strong support with minority communities in New York City.
He's always
had that. And I think the more beleaguered he's become, the more loyal they have remained or added to the numbers. And I think that plays a role in it, too.
50% approval rating as of
right now. Well, 50% is not bad.
No. That's right. That's all you need.
What has he done that's so horrible that his rating should plummet? I mean, he has made some many missteps,
but nothing horrible.
It
gets amplified, though.
The police thing police thing hurt him.
The number one issue for people in the big city is that they are protected from crime. And there was a sense, perhaps inappropriate, that he wasn't doing enough to protect them. And, you know, he brought in a very strong police commissioner who's been very good, I think, and who's much tougher in people's eyes than the mayor is on this stuff. But it's crime. It's always been crime.
Two things real quick, and then we'll go over to the break. One is that according to the poll, voters divided on the issues of education and the budget. So just to add that. And then also, it is unclear whether de Blasio will face a formidable opponent for reelection. The poll found he would hold a wide lead over two possible opponents, Raymond Kelly, former police commissioner, and Ruben Diaz, the Bronx borough president.
Yeah, but the threat he faces is in the primary, not in the general.
Right.
And so unless some billionaire weighs in, I mean, that's how the Republicans elected Bloomberg. And so, you know, the question will be whether or not there is a congressman or a comptroller who decides to primary de Blasio. And so these numbers obviously will help the mayor.
When you say comptroller, do you mean Scott Stringer down there, which is interesting because
city controller.
Because he gave because the governor in his state of the state, you may remember, gave a plum to the comptroller, to Stringer.
Right.
And I said, aha, he's probably building him up to run against de Blasio.
Well, and as you may recall, Stringer ran against Elliot Spitzer for comptroller in the city, and the governor was very helpful to Stringer in that primary.
You owe me, and therefore I own you.
Rent. I don't think it's all. Yeah. All right, we'll get back to other issues and continue our conversation, wrap up the program. But first, a short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Terrapin Restaurant and Bistro Rhinebeck, serving their organic children's menu featuring organic vegetables and free-range hormone and antibiotic-free meats and dairy. TerrapinRestaurant.com. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York. Locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating. ApexSolarPower.com for information. And the Arts at Hotchkiss, Lakeville, Connecticut. Tremaine Gallery presents The Oldest Living Things in the World. Photographs by Rachel Sussman. Opening reception January 23rd at 4. Hotchkiss.org/arts.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion that we have this morning. And it's a lot of fun this morning, having a good time.
Even with the multitasking, fun. They're all playing with their devices.
Yeah, very fun. So the Supreme Court announced Tuesday that it will consider whether President Obama exceeded his powers in trying to shield millions of illegal immigrants from deportation, stepping into one of the most contentious topics in the nation's political debate. A positive ruling from the justices would provide President Obama his last chance before leaving office to protect more than 4 million people who are parents of citizens or of lawful permanent residents and allow them to come out from the shadows to work legally, as he put it when announcing the program in November of 2014. The initiative was challenged by 26 states and has been blocked by the lower courts.
This is way bigger than immigration. This is about the power of the presidency, especially a liberal president in a time of a conservatively controlled Congress. And I think what's really being tested here is the power of the executive order. And it's truly interesting because it is indeed in the Constitution. And we've seen already that despite the 5-4 conservative tilt to the court, it has ruled in favor of Obama and Obamacare because it was a strictly constitutional reading. So I think this is an extremely interesting
case.
Okay,
so do you have a dollar you want to put on the table as to whether or not the court rules against Obama in his immigration plan?
Can I do it this way? I will rule that they are going to be in favor of executive orders, although they may say he went too far in this case. Mm-hmm. Because the way the Constitution is worded, it's like protecting the law. The president has the power to make sure the laws are enacted. Yeah. And by that very narrow definition, he does have the executive
power.
Well,
I'll put a dollar in on this, too, Al, yeah, because then we could put it in the lockbox.
That's true.
At the end.
If we lose, all right.
We can
there
do that.
Goes.
What do you think?
Oh, well, you're very generous.
Finally, a donation out of the Scotsman. No, I mean, there's two, in a sense, there's two different things here. One is the policy itself, and the other is the sort of the law. Rosemary's point is a good one, which is, the states are essentially challenging the executive's power in an issue that has typically been viewed as a national issue, and the courts have sort of ruled in his favor on other immigration-related issues in the past. But then there's the policy issue of whether or not you actually are allowing upwards to half of the undocumented immigrants in New York, in the United States, to be able to stay effectively, because they've been here a long time, they have families, the whole thing.
Well, but if you listen to the oral arguments, it's quite clear where they're going with this, which is why I'm right, except that something strange may happen here. The only person who never speaks in the court, of course, is Clarence Thomas,
right,
as we all know. So maybe he'll be the swing vote in favor of the president. Yeah, right.
No, that'll never happen.
That's another dollar we could put
there. Yeah, right.
As long as it goes into the lockbox, I'm fine with this.
I would go $5 on that one.
Well, you see, I was just being funny. Don't you see?
One more topic and then we'll finish up with the letters, and that is, because I know this is something that we've talked about and Rosemary has been, I was going to say Rosemary has been very outspoken on, you know, unlike the other issues where she...
Well, do you want a reticent person on
no,
the radio?
No,
I know.
No,
okay.
We don't.
I'm doing my job.
We love you, Rosemary.
Mike, The question is about Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan apologizing in the Flint water crisis. He gave his State of the State address yesterday and admitted that he that the mistakes were made and apologized for them. This is the EPA said that they were stepping in to work on this issue.
What do you think, Rosemary?
I was very unsatisfied. He
You would have been unsatisfied no matter what he said, would you?
Unless he had said, I have to step down because this is so egregious. I would have applauded that. But this was he wasn't an admission. He's been caught. He's been publicly shamed nationally, internationally. And look at the construction of that. Mistakes were made. As I tell my students, that's passive voice. It just gets around the question of who made those mistakes and what's being done about the people who made them. So no, very unsatisfying. Nothing in there we didn't already know.
Well, I it's a catastrophic situation.
It really is.
Where they actually, essentially, they've put the decision makers in this case were putting the cost ahead of the public's health.
Okay, so in case you're on Mars right now, just one sentence on background: the infrastructure collapsed. People are being poisoned.
Well, they had a choice.
They moved from more expensive Detroit-based water, which had its own issues, but water that was more contaminated, and the contaminants eroded the old infrastructure so that more lead from these old pipes made its way into the drinking water.
Now, am I correct on this? Is another one of those cases?
No safe level for exposure to lead.
Right. And am I correct that, because I believe I read this, that this was, as the decision was being made, there were many, many activist groups who were saying that's a bad idea, that's a bad idea,
right.
That's a bad idea.
That's
this true. Is going to happen, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. Then they flicked
care.
The switch
right.
and it happened.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, when you don't care about urban populations and you're looking more at cost and, you know, public health implications are sort of a side issue that are political, it doesn't really matter. This is when you end up with. And, I mean, you see it all across the country. There's a reason why cities' infrastructures are falling apart. They're not considered
including
to be
Troy.
Troy, New York.
That's right. And it happens everywhere. And it's because the states, the politics of the states are not to invest in infrastructure. And
they
the infrastructure
want short-term,
where they're falling,
short-term gain.
And where the infrastructure are falling apart are in urban areas.
Somebody told me the other day, maybe it was you, Rosemary, because you're always coming up with stuff I don't know, but that the pipe, I think in Troy, was from a Civil War era?
That's true. It was again in the paper today. It's from the late 1800s, a little bit past the Civil War. But these are not new. We've gotten our use out of this infrastructure. There's nothing wrong with it. It wasn't like corruption putting in bad material.
Well, you don't know.
They have to be replaced.
Yeah.
They just have to be replaced.
And there's no one cuts ribbons for digging up the road and putting in new pipes, right? You're going to get
people hate it.
Ribbons will be cut when you put up a new bridge where people can see it, or things that people see. But old infrastructure
getting replaced. There's a reason we bury this stuff.
That's right. Old infrastructure is not a big deal, and it's urban areas, and those areas typically filled with poor people, communities of color, non-voters, and they just don't care.
Well,
it's
they
terrible.
Do care. They just don't know how to make their voices heard.
No, he's saying
meant
the politicians.
Yeah.
And Michigan is Exhibit A as to what happens when you allow that to play out.
Here's one more scary thing that what I see when I look at Michigan. The government did not help people. The media, which is greatly diminished and impoverished in Michigan, did not protect the people. The only line of protection were activist groups who, as you mentioned, complained ahead of time, stayed on it, and were complaining from the minute that water system switched. They were saying, you got to test. They did the testing, not the government, not the media. That's not enough protection. We used to have this multi-layered kind of monitoring. We don't have it anymore.
When you hollow out the oversight agencies, this is what you end up with. And that's what's happening everywhere. It's not just happening in Michigan. This is a big problem. And it's about the people that are the least powerful take it in the neck, or in this case, in their, the lead levels. I mean, lead, it's
lead.
It's unbelievable. This is not something that, some new toxin that nobody knew about.
Yeah.
This is lead. We know they're in the old pipes.
Yep.
You know the pipes erode. This is not rocket science to figure this out. And yet, this is what they did, because they wanted to save money, because they simply don't care enough about urban areas.
This is a big problem. Eastern European. It really is.
Yeah. It is a tragic story. We have time for a couple of letters. I'm hoping you'll read the one from Michael, because I just want to correct the record.
Michael Lemunia?
Yes.
Okay. Palin's son, domestic abuse and guns. No mention of this in the discussion today? Check the news.
Love you, folks.
We mentioned the domestic violence.
I don't remember the guns, but it's Sarah Palin's house, so not surprising.
Yeah,
The caribou gun was there.
Okay, and we just took care of this one. Michael said, "Hi, gang. It's always great that you choose national over local. Troy has a real crisis going on. Thanks from Mike, again,
James said, about Troy and who's at fault, right?
Yes. James says, do state legislators get money to pay for constituent service? Answering letters? I ask because sometimes I write my assemblywoman and senator and never receive a response. My past legislators, Bruno, McDonald, Jordan, usually responded. Their replacements don't. Is it corruption if they get funds for this but don't do it? And what do they do with the money?
15 seconds, Blair.
They do get money. I don't know why they don't respond to constituents. That's usually a bad idea for an elected official.
All right. We're out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening and for writing and for the letters this morning. Thanks to Blair Horner. You know what?
Invite me back.
We may even have you back someday. You're pretty good at this. We may have you back. Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow. Alan?
Oh, yeah. I'll be here.
Excellent. Yeah. We look forward to that. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.